frankly been some confusion about the status of traditional council. But what you've got now is you have got traditional institutions charging tribal levies to people in Limpopo, and where people don't pay those levies, refusing to give them the straight letters that they need in order to apply for social grants. So what we're saying is people remain locked within the boundaries of those traditional councils, and that there are mechanisms that stop them from being able to move out of those boundaries. We've talked about briefly the failure that the tribal accounts in Kapwest have not been audited since 1994, despite this being a requirement of the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act. We've talked about the fact that the Auditor General has said that the reason that he has not audited those accounts is that the province has refused to make them available to him, despite the fact that the accounts worth 600 million of the Bapo Bamatali are missing from are held in the Premier's office. So these things have really material consequences for people's lives, especially when people are trying to hold traditional leaders to account. And one of the things that I think the committee really needs to be aware of is that the many traditional councils, not most traditional councils are operating in a fair and transparent manner. But where there are big mining issues at stake, what we're seeing is traditional councils signing deals with mining houses, which are opaque, which are the subject of much litigation in the Constitutional Court, and where they don't even have the legal power in terms of the framework act to sign those deals, because the only person with the legal power to sign those deals is the Minister of Land Affairs as the nominal owner of most communal land. We have a process of traditional councils in North West and Limpopo routinely interdicting people from holding meetings, despite Constitutional Court judgments in 2014 in the Tulani versus Tulani matter, which said that traditional councils do not have the power to interdict others from holding meetings, nor do they have the power to be sole representatives of rural communities. There are other customary institutions in those institutions. So
you're now concluding.
So you. May I just say.
You know why I'm asking you that? Because you see the document there, right at the end, under conclusion, summarizes the issues that you are raising. And I just want to make sure that is this indeed what you are presenting?
I'm presenting a PowerPoint based on that, but I thought it would be important, in addition to that, to just mention to the committee the tension between the content of this law and the judgment of the Constitution. Because I think it's very relevant to whether this law will survive constitutional muster. Because as the department has said, this law attempts to give these structures legal, to extend their legal life, despite the fact that they haven't complied with the provisions of the law. And the provision of the law was that if you don't comply, you will not have the status. And the explanation given by the department is that this is simply a technical matter. The amendment says that the minister will intervene when you have not complied. It takes away the prejudice or the consequence of not complying that was contained in the initial law. So what I'm really trying to say, Honourable Masondo, is that there are serious problems on the ground, and that law is meant to protect the weak and the vulnerable, and that this law, unfortunately, has elicited abuse of power that is completely contrary to customary law, and that there are two bases on which this kind of schema can be challenged. One, as inherently inconsistent with the consensual features of customary law. The other, as undermines basic rights.
Okay. Thank you very much. Colleague, can I just try to draw your attention to...
Sorry, Chair, just a point of order.
Yeah.
Chair, this Parliament has been found wanting in terms of public participation on a number of occasions. Most recently on the Rural Development and Land Reform situation, on the Restitution of Land Rights Amendment Bill. And I think every time we try and cut short submissions or public hearings, it opens us up to the possibility of legal consequences, where we get taken to court, the legislation is found wanting, and short, as you have tried to do on two occasions this morning, I think it interferes with their right to make submissions on the bill and to explain what they have submitted in writing.
I think I'm missing the point altogether.
I'm not missing any point.
You are. I think I'm missing the point altogether. I didn't cut the presentation on the LARC. All I was seeking to do was to say that let's ensure that the main points that the LARC has come to present, the main points are not missed. And the points are listed on page 7 of this document.
Do you have read that document?
I would say to you, I think we are really trying to understand someone.
Sorry, Chair, can I finish my point of order, please?
There's no point of order.
Chair, can I finish what I was saying to
you? Conclude.
You don't tell me to conclude. I will say what I want to say, and I will finish what I want to say.
1 second to conclude.
No, Chair. I will talk as long as I want to. I'm a member of Parliament. I have the right to speak in a committee. And every time you cut me short, I will carry on talking. Chair, my point of order
please
was this.
Conclude.
That when you cut a person who is making a presentation on a document, this is the background. They are expanding, they are explaining, they are giving background. There's information in the presentation that I've heard today that is not contained in this document. And when I hear that, it is a requirement in our constitution that our legislation be guided by public participation. As I said at the beginning of my point of order, when we cut that short, we open ourselves up to challenge. We have lost. This Parliament has lost on those legal challenges in the past. Now, all I'm asking is that
please
you give people...
Please conclude. Please, please.
All I'm asking is that you give people an opportunity to make their full submission.
Thank you very much. Yes, I wanted to raise the same point before my one, because you see, if somebody is presenting the real perspective is in the details. If you give the person to unpack for our own personal understanding, I think that would be good, but to rush, I think it's not quite good. Some of us are slow learners. We want to get the details so that we know how to sum the whole thing up from the details.
While Chair, we appreciate the input, but I think the challenge that we are facing, a lot of what was presented right now is not in and the presenter even went to say that wanted to present some slides. I think those slides were going to assist us a lot, because what is contained in the document, well, you can mesh one or two, but I think the gist of the presentation is in the slides that we don't have. May I request, Chair, because other questions will be questioning things that are not in front of us. We'll be questioning things that are somewhere else. Because if you look at this presentation, it's good. It's far richer than what is in front of us in the document. May we ask, Chair, if the presenter can give us the slides or they make provision of the slides before we engage on this one. Otherwise, Chair, we'll miss a lot of things. You know, the last summer that you were just capturing on, it was interesting, but you can't match it with what is in black and white.
The slides are available.
Yes, they are. Unfortunately, I just would have to put them on a memory stick because they. I finished this this morning. I apologize. Would you like me to give them to you?
Yeah, let them find out from the team. The problem with the slides. I'm just giving you here. And you can get them. Just get all of them. No. So what we'll do then, we'll have the slides very quickly. Do you think that is it possible for you just to do it as just a brief presentation of the slide?
Yes, I could do that. It's just a matter of
could I have someone to assist us? So that we have the slide. But in the meantime, once we waiting for all of that to happen, I just wonder whether you want to comment. Because just to say that the National House of Traditional Leaders, as I understand, I'm sure the correct if I'm wrong, wants an extension so that they can attend to all of these other issues that they have listed. Please, don't allow me to.
I just wanted to ask whether she's doing her presentation.
She's not. I mean, they're saying that she's going to come back and put this line. Now, I'm saying that the National House of Traditional Leadership wants an extension. If one wants to summarize the issue, they want an extension. LARC, on the other hand, puts forth an argument as reflected in this document under conclusion, right? Now the question that we need to ask ourselves is what do we do? What is the next thing to do following both presentations? Taking into account the presentation that was made by the House of Traditional Leadership the other day, now what they said this morning. And taking into account what she has said, but please, I'm drawing attention to what the conclusion of this document says, summer. But we'll give you an opportunity to speak to the other slides.
Chairperson, thank you. Fortunately, the DG is here. And Professor Nkabo of the commission, who was the first chairperson of the commission on traditional leadership disputes and claims, is amongst us here. But not that he will respond on the findings of the commission. Chair, in a nutshell, as a department and as a national house, we did not hide from this committee that transformation did not take place. That is why we approached the committee. And we indicated the challenges that are facing the department and the structure that ought to transform. And we furthermore said this year, 2017, is the year where all the structures must reconstitute. And we want them to reconstitute in a proper manner. That is why, Chairperson, we asked for the transformation. Now, Chairperson, on the issues of the report of the commission not published by the Premier and all of that, that is not something to do with the bill before us. It is another process which has to be taken up differently than in the current bill, which I don't have a problem, Chair. That is the responsibility of the Premier. Once a committee of the Commission has submitted a recommendation to the Premier, it is the responsibility of that province to release that particular finding. It is not stated anywhere in the framework as that somebody else can do it. Chair, that's number one. Number two, Chair, the issue of levies, we all know it's a challenge. And it is in a high court as we speak now. There are people who have taken that matter to high court now. And I think she's quite familiar with that case. There is a case now in high court on the levies thing. So we will hear the judgment on that particular matter. And Chair, on the accountability part, if you read your Section 4 of the Framework Act, it tells you that a traditional leader will administer the affairs of the community in terms of custom and traditions. And it furthermore says the traditional leader must at least once a year call an imbizo of the community to discuss issues of the community, and including financial accountability. That Chair does not say a traditional leader cannot have his imbizo or dipizo every quarter, every 6 months, every whatever. It depends on the arrangement of that community. But surely, Chairperson, I live that life. I don't theorize about that life. I'm a member of a community that is under a traditional leadership. I know when do we have to go for Izim Dizo, because we've got a schedule from our traditional leadership. But that does not necessarily say others may not do as it is supposed to be done. But there is a communication between communities and traditional leaders. Now, the challenges of financial management, Baba Mukhale, and all of that, that is another matter, Chairperson. I believe that when we go to ETKLB, which is Traditional Leadership and Khoisan B, it will get into details as to how those challenges will be addressed and how best we set up systems and mechanisms to address any shortcomings that we have learned from the application of the Framework Act. But the bill in question attempts to have time frames, and we indicated previously when we were before this committee, Chair, that we have appointed a service provider who is dealing with this matter as we speak. As we speak now, is having a meeting in Kuruman with traditional leaders there, preparing for the transformation and all of those kinds of things. So, Chair, we are on course. That is why we've asked for this. I know that even on that day, there was a question as you fail to transform within this year. What makes you think you can do it within such a short space of time? And my response was that the ground is fertile for planting, and fortunately in Cape Town now there's water, there's rain, and there will be germination of seed, and therefore there will be a great harvest in terms of transformation of the institution of traditional leaders. We are quite positive, Chair, that within the time frame that we're asking, it is the time frame that will be able to meet our deadline, and it is the time frame that has been agreed by MINMEC. It is the time frame that has been agreed by chairpersons of houses of traditional leaders. And it is one of the resolutions and declarations of the Indaba of traditional leaders that was just last week. So, Chair, there is nobody who will say is not ready for this, for meeting this particular time frame that we are requesting now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
No, Chair, thank you very much. Also for the explanation, I didn't anticipate a dialogue. I thought Chair will give them to finish and also take the other next presentation before they clarify, so that we know all these issues from the presentation. Thereafter, Chair, we will then engage. We might ask some written response on these issues that will be raised by the presenters, by the different submissions. I think, Chair, if we follow that route, it will make it easy, because each time they will be attempted to respond, was the fact that they have responded, the presenter might say, want to jump as well to it and say, no, I mean this and this and that. And then we may have sort of like a dialogue, Chair. That's my proposal, Chair, that let's finish this presentation of the LARC. Finished in conclusion, and also issues going to summarize their slides. I'm happy that now they have also provided, they will provide us with those slides and go through later. And then the next one comes and present as well, and the next one after that, then the committee will then start to interrogate the entire report. I think the department must be aligned.
Is it possible to really have you summarizing your slide. Just ask students what the groups are not here now.
I do have the presentation on the top.
Yeah.
We
were trying to get people to assist. But just before that, Matipe, you want to say something? Yeah. Madam, yeah.
So, I mean, basically, one of our legal concerns is that the committee has advised us is there are currently two bills before Parliament amending the same bill, requiring presumably full confrontation process. So, we really want to understand if that is not.
So, I'm just looking, but I know you're here to assist.
I'm looking for the laptop that I'm going to use.
So basically we are concerned about the question of the two bills before Parliament simultaneously and how it can be that we have one bill that seeks to extend the period while we've got another bill that seeks to repeal the Act entirely and replace it. And we do ask whether they're not questions of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And we're very interested to understand the consultation process that will happen in respect of the traditional leadership and governance framework amendment bill, the one you're currently considering. Because that bill has very, very far-reaching implications for people's rights. At the time that the bill was discussed in the committee in 2003, as I say, Eunice Arim came and made quite an extraordinary statement about not wanting to be associated with a bill that this in large part of distortion, and he made a passionate declaration that the department was committed to putting in place these two transformative mechanisms, being the elections on the one hand and the commission on the other. And I would just like to say to the department that the only, as I hear from the department, the only provision that provides for the only provision is that in diesel. The other provision that enables accountability is that the books must be audited. What happens, what mechanisms are there if in diesel is not audited? What mechanisms are there if books are not audited? We know of people in Northwest who've gone to court to ask for their books to be audited, and they have been told that they don't have the locus standi to get their books audited, and they've been awarded punitive costs. So we haven't seen any action by the department to ensure that those minimal safety measures are actually enforced. The only safety measure that required enforcement was that 40% election must be held and the one-third one. 13 years later, that hasn't taken place. This bill is not a technical bill. It is a substantive bill because it takes away the only incentive for traditional councillors to transform in that they would lose their legal status. The department has said in its memorandum that many currently have no legal status. It said in its memorandum that there are questions about the deals that they've signed. I think that the committee cannot ignore the fact that there is real turbulence in provinces like Limpopo and Northwest about whether these institutions are acting in accordance with customary law. We know that institutions in the Eastern Cape have said that they are worried that this kind of law undermines the legitimacy of traditional leaders by giving them powers that come from government and taking away the incentive for traditional leaders to comply with basic accountability mechanisms. So I would like to reiterate that this law is not a law that is being passed or a bill that is being passed in a vacuum. It takes place during the biggest platinum boom in South Africa's history, during which Platinum has been basically all in the Boer, the former Boer and the former Boer, and in both instances there has been no financial auditing of those accounts. And we know that the Makuleke Commission is currently underway in Northwest, which is unearthing extraordinary evidence about the failures of financial accountability. So what this bill would do is would give a veneer of legality to institutions that have failed to comply with the law and that have failed to be audited and that are at the center of political controversy. And the question is that in the interest of legitimate judicial leaders? Most judicial leaders do not resort to these kinds of excesses, but why would traditional leaders want powers like this? Why would they want the kind of power that's in section 24 of the traditional Khoisan leadership law, which says that traditional leaders can enter into deals without consulting with the people on the ground? And we believe that that is not just unconstitutional in terms of the Bill of Rights, but that it's fundamentally abrogated customary law, and that customary law is a kind of consensual based system based on freely given affiliation. So what we are saying is we believe that there really are questions about how Parliament can have two bills, amending the same bill simultaneously. It seems to us to reflect that there is real uncertainty about whether the TKRB can be passed or will pass constitutional muster. And what you've done is, what the Department has done is resort to an amendment to extend the life of structures which it acknowledges are invalidly constituted in a context of major questions about accountability and the legality of the action of those institutions. So to summarize, I think that there really are major, these bills raise major constitutional questions. And some of those are currently before the courts. In the litigation that's mentioned about the tribal levies in Limpopo, that litigation also seeks to have all traditional councils which have not transformed declared invalid. This amendment would take place in the curia before that judgment is made. It's an attempt to legalize something which is, according to the department's own admissions, currently unlawful.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. So what we have written in front of us is two positions, if I put it crudely. A proposal by the National House of Traditional Leaders that we should provide the extension. And then there's the position of the LARC that says there's no way that this extension can serve any purpose, and the reasons are outlined, among others, in the document in front of us under conclusion.
Could we understand better what the National House of Traditional Leaders want to do? Do they want to delay the bill, or do they want to extend the period?
They want to extend
for more than 1 year.
Yeah, maybe they should speak for themselves. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chair, Honourable Members. we had a moment, there is no law that allows a reconstitution of the houses. On the 16th of August this year, the term of the houses, Provincial House and National House, traditional leaders will be coming to an end. And these timelines were in the Framework Act that passed in September 2011. So it's not something new. And that extension of the time frames is intended to ensure that there is reconstitution. And it doesn't replace the bill that is currently before Parliament. Mm-hmm. But it's because there's no law. If we don't reconstitute, the National House will be disbanded and provincial houses will be disbanded. The law is very clear. It says 30 days before, for example, different provinces have got to reconstitute 30 days before the deadline. in order to send people to National so that we can reconstitute the National House. And so on. So it is. So that it happens.
This was stated, members, if you can remember, at the previous meeting where presentation was made. I hope we're on the same page. In terms of what would happen if nothing was to be done at all.
you see, my feeling is that we as a committee must not be seen to be gaining unconstitutional ideas against so many voices out there who are crying for the application of the law. We shouldn't be seen to be doing that. Because you see, the problem she's raising about the mining issues is all over, like she mentioned before.
There's no standing up. I mean, I myself would be very worried if that was the proposal that's being put forward. If that was indeed the intention. Can I ask Professor Moana,
I just want to finish.
Yeah.
The same goes with the commissions after commissions whose findings are not being made known to the public. And when money actually is being used to set up his commission, what is the essence of setting it up if the outcome cannot actually be made public? Isn't that quite interesting in the reports of these commissions out there?
Maybe you can assist.
Chairperson, thank you.
Just want to try to find the same page on what is being requested.
Chairperson, in the bill before the committee or before Parliament, there isn't a commission on traditional leadership disputes and claims. There isn't. Chair, there is a request for an extension in order to reconstitute. And what is before this committee, Chair, is the request that we establish kingships councils, because kingships were established in 2010 after the commission, and we don't have kingship councils. That is what is before the committee, before the parliament. However, to put members at ease with regard to the findings of the commission, just to give a broad narrative, Chair, the decisions of the Commission on Traditional Leadership Disputes and Claims that was commonly known as the Nkapo Commission, we're starting from there. The decisions have been implemented. There is no decision that has not been implemented. They've all been implemented. That's why we talk about kingships established in 2010. They have been implemented. That's number one. Number two, Chairperson, the decisions of the recommendations of the current commission, out of we inherited 1,244 cases of claims and disputes from the previous commission. And out of that, Chair, we've finalized over 900 cases. And out of that, Chair, very few that have not been released. That is the one I think they are referring to, especially the Northwest. That is the one on Bakhate Bakhafela, which a commission chaired by the judge or a senior counsel has been established to consider that. There is a process that is going on there. But all those resolutions or recommendations of the current commission, which has power to recommend, have been implemented here. So we cannot say we have implemented 9 and we did not implement, out of 10, we did not implement 1. The commission, the decisions of the commission have failed to be implemented. It's unfair. Chair, we have done a lot to implement as a department. We have encouraged provinces to implement and make sure that all those recommendations are before the premier. For instance, there is no recommendation that has not been implemented in Mpumalanga. Now, must Mpumalanga suffer because Northwest has not implemented 3 of the recommendations out of about 60, out of about 86 claims and disputes that were before the committee in Limpopo, in Northwest. There are those things that we needed to look into. But what we are here as a department and National House, we are here to ask that can you please give us time? Can you please consider what we are requesting so that we are able to transform, we are able to align the structures of the institution. Otherwise, we're going to collapse come the 16th of August if we don't have this structure reconstituted. That is why, Chairperson, we even said previously, we even brought Professor Mkunu before the commission to say, this is the person who's preparing the ground for us and we are ready to implement. That is why earlier on, Chair, I said, he is at Kuruman conducting workshops and guiding traditional leaders how to reconstitute. So Chair, that is the only thing that we are here to request. But if the committee wants more information, if the committee can say so, we can come and do a full presentation on the commission, a full presentation on the National House, provincial houses, everything about the institution of traditional
to the NARC, is the request understood? The request?
The request from the department?
No, from the House of National House of Traditional.
No, I still don't understand if you want a longer period or you want to delay the bill. Sorry.
Why? I clarify further to say that I have indicated that the timelines for reconstitution was in the Framework Act, which was promulgated in 2003. So it has been there all along. And houses, as he has rightfully pointed out, have been reconstituted throughout that period. But for some reason, some provinces did not comply with those timelines. And that timeline collapsed. And in between that time, we also had the kingships that he's talking about. Now, what delayed the establishment of King's Councils, one of the things is that we had to consult it. There's a requirement that we consult the King's Councils on the formula. And then we have consulted the kingships, and we have completed that. But we don't have any legal basis to establish those King's Councils. So what we're requesting is just a technical aspect. Now the issues of transformation and the rest of the other things, now the distinction between the bill on the traditional and Khoisan leadership and so on, we were aware that it may take longer and it may go beyond August this year. Now there is this lacuna that we have now, that we don't have any law that informs the reconstitution of the houses as they come to the end. There have been, from 1997, we have had National House, you know, governed by these pieces of legislation. From 1997, provincial houses have been established from long time ago. It is only the previous term where we were able to align provincial terms with the National House, so that you don't have a province term coming to an end before the National House, where they withdraw a member from the National House because the term came earlier. So we have managed to align that, and we wanted to maintain that alignment. So it's not a new thing that is being requested. It has nothing to do with transformation.
So the question I'm asking is whether the request is understood, not whether you agree with it, whether the request that they're making is understood.
So I understand them to be saying that they need an amendment in relation to the National House. But in order to constitute these councils. I also understand them to be saying that these traditional councils have been unlawful in the Mpopo's case since 2007, and that many of them have been invalid since 2011. So I think that if the bill was purely to provide for the National House to be constituted, that wouldn't be a problem. But insofar as it extends the period without any indication of what will happen if they don't transform within that period. It's not that they're extending it for a period. They're saying they're going to give them another year and then the Premier will intervene. The bill currently, the Act currently says if they haven't conformed, they have no legal status. So there you're dealing with people's rights. You're dealing with people's rights to have transformed traditional councils. And I think that aspect of extending the period for the compliance of traditional councils could be removed from the bill, because that's where you're going to run into major constitutional problems.
Thank you very much. I'm told that there are some lawyers in the room. Kumelele, I don't know who else is here, the lawyers. No, we'll come back to this. That's enough. Can we have your comment?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yesilema from Legal Services in Parliament, and I'm with Ms. Ibrahim, Fatima Ibrahim from our offices as well. She's the one basically attending to this bill. But perhaps, Chairperson, one crucial thing that we need to clarify and bring on board at this very moment is understanding the discussions and the deliberations as they are going on. Perhaps it is crucial to clarify the fact that first of all, there is a principal act which is in existence. And the amendments here that the committee is dealing with today seek to amend only three sections in that principal bill, which is Section 3, Section 3A, and Section 28. And as has already been indicated, the main thing that bill that the committee is deliberating today, it seeks to speak to the time frame in respect of reconstituting or in respect of establishing a traditional council where there is an interchange in the name of traditional authority and traditional council. But the committee needs to be aware as well that that principal act, there is already a bill which is before this committee, which is the Traditional Leadership and Cohesion Bill, which seeks to repeal the principal act and look at everything else, and that process is also underway. So this one is basically not looking at everything else, but only two things, the time frame in respect of the traditional council, those that have already been established, and those that have not at all complied with the law as it stands. So that distinction is crucial, and members need to also, and the presenters need to separate that there are those two bills which are both before Parliament and which eventually, once it's passed by Parliament and is enacted into law, it will be a new law, new legislation that should speak to how traditional leaders in entirety are conducting themselves and are being regulated. So there is that crucial distinction. At this point, we are not dealing with the traditional leadership bill in its entirety. And the principal act as it stands, the Traditional Leadership Framework Act, which was enacted in 2003. We are not at that stage. We are only dealing with the technical bill as they've indicated. They require an extension of the time frame to do what has not been done or to correct what has been picked up already as going wrong. But without the enactment into law, which allows that time, it cannot be done, because anything that is to be done, it must have authority in terms of legislation if you are exercising public power. And that is basically what is happening here.
Thank you very much. Is there any other lawyer? So the matter is going to have any other lawyer here?
Thanks. Chair and honourable members, I think she has summarised it perfectly well. But I can hear that you know, the traditional council issue, that there may be some misunderstanding as to why we are in this position. So let me just explain as briefly as possible. 2003 Framework Act, when it came into operation, made provision for the old tribal authorities to be reconstituted into traditional councils, but it had to be subject to certain conditions. A period of 1 year was allowed for that to happen. It didn't happen. The time frame was too short. In 2009, government amended the Framework Act and extended that particular time frame with 7 years, if I remember correctly. The problem is that when they drafted that bill, that amendment bill in 2009, the way in which they drafted it created a problem, because that additional time frame had to be calculated not from the date, unfortunately, of the commencement of the amendment of 2009, but it was calculated eventually from the date of the commencement of the original act, which meant that the time frame had actually lapsed in 2011, which created a serious problem, because in 2009 they introduced two new principles. The one was a formula. The premiers had to issue a formula that would determine the number of memberships of traditional councils. And that formula had to be based on guidelines issued by the national minister. Now, if you go and you look at the time frames, effectively, I think there was something like only 4 months really available to issue guidelines and for provinces to issue their own formula based on the guidelines. That was a mistake, and we have to admit that it was a mistake in the drafting process, firstly. And secondly, the guidelines, the first set of guidelines were issued in 2011, but there was no time left for the provinces to actually go and make provision for their formula. Now, remember that this is a concurrent legislative competency as well. So all provinces do have legislation dealing with traditional leadership, except, of course, the Western Cape. But none of the provincial laws make provision for the reconstitution theory. None of them do. And when the department started looking into the challenges that may come up in 2017, when the reconstitution is done, we found that there may not be a legislative enabling provision that can be used for reconstitution. I think we all thought that maybe by now, as we said last week when we were here with the, at the committee, we thought that maybe the traditional voice of leadership would have been law by now, and it would have created the enabling provision, but it is not. So just on that. Now on the kingship councils, just very briefly. The kingship councils had a very similar provision. It said that these councils had to be established within 1 year from the date that they are recognized as kingships. Now, I think as the historian pointed out, the kingships were recognized in 2010. So that 1 year lapsed in 2011. Two things that came in there is important. One is, again, the number of members had to be determined by means of a formula, and certain consultations had to take place with the kingships before that formula could be issued. In practice, the department found both to be quite challenging. Developing the formula was quite a challenge. It has been done in the meantime. It is there. It has been consulted on with almost all the kingships. But again, the time frame was just simply too short to meet those requirements. And then, Chair, if I just may make a very last comment. On the presenter mentioned the issue of auditing, for example. I think it's important to note, auditing of traditional councils. Every single piece of provincial legislation dealing with traditional leadership does make provision for auditing. Seven of those make provision for auditing by the Auditor General. Whether it's done, I can't say, because it's a provincial, in provincial law that they are responsible for. The only one that doesn't say auditing by the Auditor General is Mpumalanga. That one just says it must be audited. So I thought, let me just use the opportunity also raise that. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, can I pose the question? And this is not to say, find out from you whether you agree or disagree and so on. It's neither here nor there. For now, the key issue is whether we understand the explanation as given by the lawyers. Does it assist us?
Yes. If I just ask to note that the amendments that they are seeking take away the elements in the Framework Act, the provision in the Framework Act that says these are deemed to be they're saying they need another year in which to do the process, but they're not saying that the amendment law takes away that divided that. So they are not being frank in that they're not explaining that this does more than give another year. It takes away the consequences for traditional councils of not transforming, and it just requires intervention by the Premier. And you know, they may pretend that is insubstantial, but the court would find it very
difficult. And then we'll come to Yambo and then.
Chairperson, just a couple of questions here, because the more I hear, the more this amendment worries me. One of the primary motivators for this is so that, for this amendment, is so that the National House of Traditional Leaders can be reconstituted when its term of office expires in August of this year. Mm-hmm. So in other words, we've got to have the traditional councils in place, we've got to have the provincial councils in place, and then we have the National House in place. It's to align all of those processes that there's a structure. And the, the Principal Act already makes provision for that. It says the term of office must be aligned to the National House of Traditional Leaders. I'm happy with that. I don't have a problem with that. But I have a question. And that is, first of all, how is this amendment, which, assuming everything goes absolutely perfectly, everybody agrees, and we can already see that there is not much agreement on anything here. But assuming everybody agrees, the time frame for this amendment to be passed is likely to be about 2 to 3 months by the House. Still got to go through the National Council of Provinces. It's still got to go through the provincial legislatures. And they've got to have their hearings, and they've got to have their processes that they have to follow. So we're talking probably only the end of the year before this legislation is actually signed by the President and becomes law. How is this going to actually affect anything, given that the National House's term of office expires in August of 2017? That's my first question. My second question is, what is the scope of the problem? How many traditional councils are we talking about that are affected, that haven't done what they are supposed to have done? How many traditional councils are not properly constituted? How big is the problem? My third question is, what are the legal status of those traditional councils that are not properly constituted or whose term of office has already expired? What is the consequences of their going and signing a contract with a mining house or leasing a piece of property out to somebody? What are the legal implications of that? And my last question is, again, those traditional councils that are improperly constituted or do not comply, or however you want to describe them, or their term of office has terminated, are they still being paid? Are they still being remunerated for the services that they have no legal right to be remunerated for? So I've got four major issues here with this legislation, and I need to understand it better before I can say, yes, this is good legislation, or no, this is bad legislation.
No, Chair. I just want to go to the principle that we didn't differ with the initiatives of this bill is taking us backwards. I think for now it is not an issue of whether anybody understands this or not understand, particularly the LARC. I think we let's appreciate the presentation and the vision how it is like. We will look into that. Let's not debate that, Chair. Let's go through this alone, and then we'll take a decision. To the department, we will write to them the question that we want after taking this.
No, Chairperson, thank you very much. I think some of my concerns were raised by Honorable Mele, because what I wanted to understand is we are left only with 2 months before August, and the extension that you are requesting, will you be able to meet the deadline so that you can reconstitute the council in August when we are elected?
I don't know if the lawyers want to take another bite. Yeah, let's start with you.
Thank you, Chair.
I know that you wanted to speak as well. So let's start with the lawyers and come to you.
Okay, from my side, just briefly. On the issue that the provider of the current piece of legislation talking about tribal authorities converting into judicial councils, that the provider is not there, is there. It is in the vote. It still says that provided the tribal authorities must be reconstituted, the wording was changed like the provider for this. It must be reconstituted to comply with the provisions of Section 3.2. It's exactly the same as in the
still there, which means they cannot just simply be transformed or converted into judicial council if they do not meet this particular requirement. So it's still there. What has changed is the act as it reads at the moment, talking about 7 years. That's the 7 years we were talking about that has lapsed. We have changed it to 1 year. 1 year, but it's 1 year from the commencement of this amendment bill. Not making the same mistake again. It's not 1 year from the original, from this amendment bill. And then, very important, what has been brought in that is not there currently, which is a problem we spoke about last week. The National Department or Minister does not have any powers to intervene anywhere or to assist provincial government with these kind of processes like the reconstitution process. And we're bringing in that principle to say, if they do not do this, then from national side, we can help them and assist them. Because ultimately, we want these structures to be there and to be functional. On the issue of the National House, whether they can, whether it's a, well, obviously, first prize will be to have them reconstituted. But there is a provision in the National House Act that says, once their term is ended, and you have not had the opportunity to reconstitute them, they can continue to assist to some extent to deal with urgent matters until you have the new National House in place. So there is something to do with urgent matters. The minister can call them, and the provision in the House Act says it's exactly the same people that are members at the date that their term expires that will continue to be members for those specific purposes. So if they, for example, somebody asked a long time ago, what would this kind of urgent matters be? Now let's say the term of the National House ends in August, and Parliament refers in terms of the law, the specific bill to the National House for comment. And there is now no House because the term expired. Then they can be called together again in terms of the provision that's already in the National House Act to deal with that matter. The other one I want to deal with, Chair, is the Mr. Malin referred to the whether people are paid. Remember that members of traditional councils, the traditional leaders, are not paid because they are members of the council. They are paid because they are traditional leaders, because they are recognized as traditional leaders. So they do get salaries in any council. The councils as such, they are supported by provincial government. The law makes provision for administrative and financial support to be given to these councils. That's for them to function, to have a photocopier, to have a computer, offices that are rented, some offices belong to public works, etc. So that support is there for them to function. But the traditional leaders are paid. The same, of course, will apply in future when we have poison councils in terms of the other bodies. The senior poison council leaders will receive salaries. The one about how many of these traditional councils are not functioning at the moment, I think I will ask you to report it about at least the service providers are actually also looking at that at the moment. Thank you.
So I could do Motokumanele, then DG, then yourself.
The answer on the legal issue is very clear to me, but I believe the problem arises in the approach we are now taking, because it seems as the presenter is still on the stand, and the presenter has made submissions to the committee, and we are now taking either bite in response to what has been submitted and giving answers to questions that also arise from the members in relation to what has been stated.
Now, the reason why I'm doing that is just to
No, Chairperson,
I'm very trying to make sure that this question of suppressing anybody's opinion and so on does not arise. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. So, and just to deal with only the specific legal question that has been asked in relation to the time frame and the connection between the term and the lapsing of the term of the National House and the traditional leaders. Let's take a step to the bill which the committee is deliberating. If we look at Section 3A of the Principal Act, And the Principal Act is the traditional framework government act. And with the permission of the chairperson, may I just read it out. In subsection 1, it says, once the president has recognized the kingship or queenship, that kingship or queenship must, within 1 year of the recognition, establish either the kingship or the queenship council. Now, this provision speaks to the actions that will be taken by the president in recognizing any specific traditional leader as either a king or a queen of a specific traditional community. And once that has taken place, the president has done the recognition. The provision goes then further to say, once you, traditional leader who has been recognized as a king or as a queen, you are then, in terms of this provision, required after your recognition within that year to establish your council, which will be a kingship or a queenship council. And that is basically what this committee is dealing with. The same thing applies to other traditional councils. Whether there be a kingship council or a queenship council, but everything that is understood and tend to be a traditional council, it is a requirement that once the authority within that specific tribal community or traditional community has been recognized, having followed all the criteria and all the requirements, there is a further exercise that is required to put the recognition and the authority of each council understood. Now, the only thing that this bill seeks to then do, the principal acts of saying 1 year. Now, this one is saying, instead of that recognition of the council now, of that specific recognized king or queen, be done in 1 year, they are saying, they are only saying, let's change the provision in the act to be 2 years instead of 1 year. It doesn't speak to all the other things and everything that must be done right.
Thank you very much.
The issue that was responded to from Honorable Mellon, you know, what happens in terms of the deal, so, you know, consequences of signing agreements when the chief traditional council is not reconstituted, and so on. We've got many examples of challenges, because if they sign deals and so on, they are not reconstituted, they are not a legal entity. And that is why we have appointed a service provider nationally to assess all these, so that we can make sure that all of them across the country are reconstituted. So there are obviously dire consequences, you know, because they are not a legal entity, they are not reconstituted.
Sorry,
Chair,
there was another question that wasn't
answered. I've not allowed you to speak. Raise your hand.
I just raised my hand and you didn't look at me. Chair, I asked if there's another question that hasn't been answered.
I'm not allowing you to speak.
Chairperson, I think my hand up. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members of Parliament, the DG and legal advisors from National and Parliament and Chairperson, some of the questions have been answered by the legal members. There's one thing that I want to clarify before this particular committee. Regarding the issues of financial implications, traditional councils are not permanent structures. Provincial houses are not permanent structures. The national house is not a permanent structure. As Dr. Brest has put it, Amakosi are only paid stipend as Amakosi, because what they are getting paid, what they are getting is not from their salary, it's stipend. Therefore, the final implications that is threatening people really is not a cause for concern. What we are appealing Chairperson, as an institution, as Mr. Stoller has put it before, when there was the seeking of a commission on disputes and claims regarding issues of kingship, some of the incumbents, that the kings, are normal kings. They are now traditional, principal traditional leaders. Unless otherwise, we do not have a clause that provides for these principal traditional leaders to constitute their councils, they are not going to be able to do that. Hence, if you look at the submission that you are bringing before the Portfolio Committee, we are saying we request the inclusion of a new clause that is going to consider the so-called deemed kings who are now going to be principal traditional leaders. That's one. Two, on the other side, the amendment bill, it's only seeking for an extension of 1 year in order to align and harmonize all structures of traditional leadership. That is what we are looking at. Therefore, it is the prerogative of the parliament to consider expediency in terms of the whole process in passing this particular proposed amendment of the principal act as the legal advisor has indicated. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Madam, I'm giving the last opportunity to speak, and after that, I guess we may have to excuse everybody else and remain as a committee to determine what is the way forward.
Okay, just as a point of order, you can excuse everybody, but they're entitled to stay. Our committee meetings are open meetings, so anyone is welcome to stay. But Chair, my question was, and it wasn't answered, is what is the scope of the problem? How many traditional councils have not properly constituted? How many traditional councils have not reconstituted? How many traditional councils have constituted but have done so in a manner that does not comply with the regulations? How big is the problem that we are talking about?
Chairperson, thank you. The problem we have basically covers the people, maybe before even coming to the people. We need to clarify some issues before the committee. Some, as Nkosi has just indicated now, some TCs were reconstituted and they collapsed in the process of operation. However, the severity of the of this challenge is basically in Limpopo, Mpumalanga. Basically, in each and every province, there are some pockets of these challenges that are there. So that is what we are trying to address here. The biggest part is in the Limpopo province, but in other provinces, there are just pockets there and there. Some that were correctly constituted, but they collapsed in the process of operation, wherein some members resigned as a result of A, B, C, and D, some reasons they have done. More specifically on the finances, the allowances for attending meetings and the like. But the critical issue is that we have a challenge in Limpopo, we have some pockets of challenges in Mpumalanga, with challenges in Eastern Cape. With some challenges in Northwest as well. So those are the pockets of challenges. And coming to principles, we will have a challenge in three states, as the court has indicated. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I just to also add that, just supplement what you said. We have about 840 traditional councils in the country. So that is why, we're not, we're talking about some pockets in certain provinces that would not have done this properly.
Okay. You don't want the opportunity to speak.
Can I speak here?
Have the last word.
Yeah, Yeah, you see, the problem we are having as a country, the reason why this traditional structure just fall apart, it is because there are rules not well defined in any of these acts, not well defined. And as such, they are actually demanding the rules of statutory structure, municipality. That's the reason why they abstain from municipal council. They say, no, we want to participate inside. But then the thing is, what are their rules? They want those rules. Until you come to that point, I'm telling you, they will keep on rising and collapsing, rising and collapsing. So the best thing is that the government of the day must sit down and see what the rules they are being assigned. Because, you know, there is an incompatibility between special structures and this traditional standards we are talking about. They are incompatible. Because what they are demanding the rules of, you know, statutory structure.
No, thank you very much. I guess we've covered a lot of ground, the measure of clarity. There may be different opinions about agreeing or not agreeing. I want to at this point, adjourn the meeting. For now, I think that's. So thank you very much for coming, and your contribution has been very much appreciated. And also indicate that it is very good to see you in person. In the way part of the meeting. Thank you very much.